This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We've talked before on the show about how detective novels offer some of the best writing about contemporary life. My guest is the author of a new novel that helps prove the point. Plus, the writer is himself a criminal investigator. My guest, John Straley, lives in Sitka, Alaska, and works for the state's Public Defender Agency. He grew up in California, Seattle, and New York, studied writing, earned a living shoeing horses, and moved to Alaska when his wife got a job there as a biologist. For several years, Straley worked on a collection of oral histories of older Alaskan residents. He became a detective in 1983 when he was offered a job by a friend who was a criminal defense attorney and needed help finding witnesses and doing interviews. The detective Straley has created for his new novel, The Woman Who Married a Bear, is lonely, depressed, and often lost in an alcoholic haze. Straley joins us from Sitka. Here's a reading.
After I was fired from the Public Defender Agency in Juneau, I was out of commission for a while and then came to Sitka. It seemed foolish to the people in Juneau, some of whom I had grown up with. They said I could never run a business in Sitka. It's only about 70 miles by air from Juneau, but to Junoites, Sitka is almost the third world. For all of its historic charm and clinket Russian heritage, it's a hick town. Come on, they said. Mysterious blondes never go to Sitka when they want to hire a detective to find a rare coin stolen from their father's mansion. It's true. But still, I seem to get enough work that keeps me busy. Rape, assault, an occasional murder. Always for the defense, and an occasional personal injury civil suit. I don't do divorces or insurance work unless I'm completely broke, which is about four times a year. I don't do all that much of my work in Sitka, but travel out of town. Because of my reputation, I can't charge what most of the ex-cop-type investigators get, so I get work from skinflints all over the state who don't care as much about reputation as they do about billings. I'm not too disappointed that I don't do much work here in Sitka, because I'm not liked all that well around here as it is, without having every sex offender who surfaces in my new hometown as a client. Having a lot of enemies has few advantages, but one of them is being able to trust the couple of friends that you have. My friends have to suffer some public humiliation just by being associated with me, and this gives us a certain esprit de corps not enjoyed by people with more morally comfortable lives. We judge each other by what we don't have as a consequence of being together, what we've given up. It was pointed out rather dramatically by the woman who used to love me that this was a bonding based on emotional and spiritual poverty. She laid these insights on me about 6 months ago as she was leaving. She said she wanted more than ego, irony, and alcohol. I agreed, but I couldn't imagine what was left, other than silliness and maybe despair. She walked out the door, and I waited 10 minutes and then went to the bar.
That's John Straley reading from his new novel, The Woman Who Married a Bear. John, you started writing crime novels recently. This is your first, but you've been a detective for some time. How did you decide to start writing detective novels?
Well, I had wanted to write ever since eighth grade when I had a mysterious and drunken English teacher in the private school I went to. And so I'd just been enamored of writing. And I was actually looking for different types of work that would let me write poetry, mostly. And I worked as a horseshoer for a long time, and then I worked for the Forest Service up in Alaska. And I wasn't making any money at that. And I had a friend who was a criminal defense lawyer that asked me to come to work for him to do interviews and track people down. So I started doing that. So I found myself being kind of a person in love with stories and literature, working as a private investigator in Alaska. And I thought, well, that would probably be a good place to start if I wanted to write a novel.
Were you reading a lot of crime fiction before writing it yourself?
I don't read near as much crime fiction as my mother and my sister. I've read, some. I've read maybe one or two by most of the major crime writers. But I read a lot of poetry, and I read a lot of nature writing, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a passage in which your character describes himself as a physical disappointment. You know, people who see him can't imagine that he's a private investigator, and he's expected to carry a gun, which he never does. Do you think of yourself as being a physical disappointment when people find out what you do?
Sometimes. People have a very high expectation. A lot of times when you knock on their door and you say that you're working for an attorney or a private investigator, and they step back several times and sort of shake their heads. It's as if they're expecting Magnum or someone else. I disappoint them not so much in my appearance, but sort of the mundane nature of the questions I usually end up having to ask.
What kinds of questions?
Oh, just this, you know, the typical ones where were you, and do you remember talking to the police? And rarely do I pull the missing smoking gun out of my pocket and beat a confession out of somebody.
Do you ever have trouble getting in the door?
Yeah, I'm kind of I appeal to their instincts as far as showing pity on me.
How do you get the pity?
You know, some of it is just body language. When they first see me at the door, they sort of react defensively, and a lot of times I sort of slump, or even when people start yelling at me, a lot of times I actually squat down, and they'll be yelling at me about how they've been, you know, talked to before and by hundreds of other investigators, and why should you talk to me now? And I sometimes I'll squat and I'll say, oh, that must be just awful for you, you know. And then I get them talking about why they're so angry at me, and by the end of that, usually they ask me in for coffee.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've said that you named your main character Cecil Younger because you wanted him to be part nerd, part outlaw. What kind of character did you want him to have?
Well, I wanted him in the context of this book. I wanted him to be a person with two distinct natures, and sort of be caught between the two. And I wanted him to be a person that he's not a hero in the sense that he makes things happen in this mystery. He's a person that things happen to, and he spends a lot of time confused. But I also didn't want him to be just the subject of being butted around in this mystery. So I wanted him to have some sort of strength and courage when push came to shove.
How does the type of case you get compare to the type of case he gets?
Well, Cecil is kind of broken down in his career. He gets very low-paying, run-of-the-mill cases. I've been lucky in the last few years. I've had some high-profile cases, some cases where people need someone that they don't have to supervise quite as much. And that's a big difference between me and Cecil. I don't think I wouldn't trust Cecil with going with a defense investigation all by himself. And I think I've been able to get people to give me a pretty free rein.
Cecil often gets cases where he's supposed to be finding out the truth about someone who's wearing a neck brace, you know, who sued for whiplash or something. He's supposed to photograph them playing tennis or on a trampoline to prove that they're faking it. Have you had to do cases like that in your time?
No, you know, that is one big difference. I don't do those kind of cases. I haven't done any of them. I do almost completely criminal defense work.
Mm-hmm.
And now I work for the Public Defender Agency, so I work for the people who are indigent and in jail and have publicly appointed counsel. I had one, years ago when I had my own practice, I had one guy in a small town that wanted me to follow his wife to see who she was sleeping with, and I refused that case because he didn't really want to know, but he said he wanted to know, so I just told him to go down to the barbershop because everybody knew in this small town.
Did you already know?
Yeah, I had known, but he was, you know, he says, but I just got to know. I need photographs, and I says, well, you know, it's going to cost you about $700 for these photographs. Why don't you just take that and put it into some counseling or something?
Did you also want to avoid being in the sleazy position of photographing two people making love through the window or something?
Yeah, I mean, I really don't feel that does anybody any good at that point. And it was just something I didn't want to do.
What was it like the first time for you that you were at the scene of a crime?
It's a very chilling experience. A lot of the experience I had with crime up to that point is mostly with language, reading about things, going over interviews, looking at photographs. But when you first walk into a murder scene where there is blood that smells like blood and weapons that are not abstract in the least, but very real. It gave me at that time a whole new sense of just the brutality and the sorrow that's involved in all that crime. It made me much less cynical and much less cavalier about doing investigations.
How did it make you less cynical?
Well, when I first started off doing these investigations, I was tempted to think of it as far as good guy, bad guy. It was the defense lawyers against the prosecutors. And you can get really wrapped up in that way of looking at a crime. And it's us against them. And a lot of times when you do that, you begin to lose sight of not only your client, who might be suffering in this process, but also the victims of the crimes. That's what I mean by being less cynical. I remembered that it wasn't about me, and it wasn't about the prosecutors or the police. It was about usually a horrifying or a brutal event.
Do you end up running into a lot of people who have left the place that they're from because they felt they didn't fit in and moved to the last frontier, Alaska, or moved to Alaska because they were going to get rich quick working on the pipeline or whatever? I mean, I think Alaska really has been seen as the last frontier and has attracted a lot of people who saw themselves as misfits.
Yeah, there are several communities out on the coast here. Especially, I live in southeastern Alaska, down on the Panhandle, and some people that are heading out of the lower 48 states just have enough money to get to Ketchikan, say, and on the ferry, and from there they look for cash jobs out in the logging camps or in the fishing industry. And I don't have anything to compare it to, but I'm always been amazed at the number of people that I've met in those communities that end up living under false names or escaping their past in some way. It's remarkable how many of those people there are.
If you're just joining us, my guest is John Straley, and he's an investigator in Sitka, Alaska, and he's also the author of a new mystery novel called The Woman Who Married a Bear. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is detective writer and detective John Straley. He's based in Alaska. How did you prepare yourself to write this novel, your first detective novel? Did you go on a reading binge and kind of check out the genre before you started yourself?
Well, I had read Hammett and Chandler and some Ross McDonald, I had been working on a manuscript of oral histories from old timers living here in the Pioneer Home in Sitka, and I just talked to them and picked up stories from them and transcribed them. And one of the stories was from a Tlingit native person who told me a story about the woman who married a bear. And I had been also just starting off working as a private investigator. And all of these things sort of wrapped up, mixed into a theme of real mystery to me, and I wanted to write about it. And this book took several forms. I worked on it over a period of about 7 years, and at first the detective was a lot more hard boiled. He was a Vietnam vet, and he was a lot tougher, and he was almost a parody of himself. And that was pointed out to me that didn't really work, and so I reworked him, and I put him in the center of a crime that also had, at the sort of the thematic center of it, this story about a woman who married a bear.
You know, I think you've put a fair amount of yourself into this character, although ultimately he's probably not that much like you. But for instance, your detective is often carrying around a book, sometimes a book of Wendell Berry poems. And you have these great observations, like, you know, the character leaves the book out on a bench because he doesn't feel like carrying it, but he knows it will be safe because no one steals books. Poetry is particularly safe.
Yeah.
And your detective writes, and as a matter of fact, there's a haiku that opens the book. Can I get you to read that haiku?
Yeah. I worked on this haiku almost all of one summer. I do a journal writing as well, and I end my journal selections with a haiku. It's sort of like a stretching exercise for me. But this is how my book starts, starts Sitka, Alaska, October. My head is a cup left out on a stormy autumn night, half full of water and a spider.
I actually quite like that.
Oh, well, good.
Yeah, so that was a real haiku that you wrote and then gave your character.
Yeah, well, it's a botched haiku, of course. I mean, it's not the 17 syllables that is required in the Japanese, I guess. But yeah, it was one that I had worked on. Actually, this turned out to be an autumn haiku, and the one I had written at first was a summer haiku. The first one I had written was a summer night.
Your character also, I think, has good taste in music. He listens to Sonny Rollins and Willie Dixon, among others. Do you ever find yourself judging contemporary novelists by their tastes in music and books?
All the time.
Yeah,
I part of why I threw that in as part of his character is I'm trying to make a connection between the landscape, this wildness that I see around me in Alaska, and this interior life of this guy, and I think music expresses that really well, and even particularly some jazz and bebop or even the more outside forms of rock and roll music. I get tired of wildlife films with sort of this fuzzy new age sort of drifting panpipe stuff. I think a lot of the connection this guy makes is through all of his senses, through taste and sound and music.
In your novel, the client who the detective is representing is a Tlingit woman, a native Alaskan. And she tells him the story of the woman who married a bear. And it's all kind of elliptical to the character. I wonder if you've ever been in that kind of situation yourself where you're dealing with, a native Alaskan. And, we're dealing with a native, and they speak in a language that's kind of different from white people's language, and you have to kind of decipher what's being gotten to.
Yeah, there is a tremendous gulf between native people and white people in the North that is rarely ever discussed, or because it's not a gulf along the language of economy or something. We can understand each other pretty well that way, but there is a gulf between sort of this metaphorical thinking that you particularly run into it in the legal world, where people whose maybe first language is not English are involved in crime or in a legal setting where they're not being judged by their actions, really. They're being judged by the words of the witnesses. And so the words that are being chosen are very important and often don't translate at all. So it's a very rich and complex world, this gulf between these two ways of thinking.
How have you had to deal with that?
I've learned from blowing interviews with native people by misinterpreting their body language, by thinking somebody is lying when really they're doing something that's just totally culturally appropriate, like avoiding eye contact or having long pauses. When I first started interviewing certain native people, and I hate to, characterize them all as being of a piece, because they're not. They're all very different. But I have had the experience in interviewing people where they will not look at me. When I'm asked a question, they'll have long, long pauses that make me feel uncomfortable and at first make me think they're being deceptive. After spending more and more time with them, that it's just part of their the cultural difference. That's exactly how they communicate, and it doesn't have anything to do with the sort of the cultural cues that I'm looking for.
Has your book been out long enough yet that people who you have to interview for your work as an investigator have read it?
I'm starting to get that right now.
What's it like, and how does it affect your investigating work?
I don't know. It might be a problem.
Yeah, because you want to keep such a low profile all the time. This isn't going to be very helpful.
I know. I was looking for somebody in the Capitol over in Juneau. I was wandering around, and I thought, you know, I had on my secret powers of invisibility, and a person came out of the crowd and said, "Are you John Straley? I just saw your blah, blah, blah." Oh, and it just terrified me. You know, for the most part, and the people in the what should I call it? The criminal milieu. I don't think they're going to be reading my book, and I don't think that's much of a problem. The other people that have read it, they, you know, they realize that since it doesn't comport with their idea of what the real Alaska is, it's obviously a fiction, and they don't have to worry about it.
One last question: if forced mm-hmm. to choose, which would you choose, being an investigator or writing detective novels?
Well, if I had to absolutely choose, if I had to choose, I would try to do some of both. Because I can't, if I just stayed in my room and with my word processor and tried to type away at what I think a mystery should be, I can imagine that I would go stale and pretty fast. Every time I think I understand, you know, human nature, every time I think I have really got this life up in the north in Alaska just pegged, and I go outside and I meet somebody new, and I'm just totally surprised every day and challenged every day when I work as an investigator. So it would be a tough thing to do to give that up. I think I might go pretty stale and start sounding like, college freshman writing about what he thinks an investigator should be if I wasn't actually doing it.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, I want to thank you. It's been a thrill.
John Straley's new novel, The Woman Who Married a Bear, is published by Soho Press. He spoke to us from Sitka, Alaska. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.